So what happens to them? State pays for them to be buried or something? His chin dipped in a nod. Riverwood Funeral Home handles the pauper burials for this parish, and they get reimbursed a set amount for each one. They have a plot set aside for the pauper burials. No headstones or anything, though. I frowned. Why not? What, poor people don't deserve a real grave? A whisper of amusement lit his eyes. They get a real grave, and the exact location is recorded. But there are a lot of people who'd never pay for a funeral if they knew the state would do it for free. Ah, I get it, I said. People who want to be able to visit the grave are going to pay for it. Bet there are still people who don't care, though. Agreed, which seems fair enough, I suppose. Funerals can be expensive, and are for the survivors, not the decedents. I simply nodded in response. We'd had Mom cremated after she hung herself. There'd been no funeral. No one would have come to it anyway. That's what happened to the other headless guy, Jerry said. I gave him a blank look. What happened? No next of kin was found, so Riverwood took him, gave him a pauper burial.
I sat on the edge of the desk. This was the guy who'd been killed while I was stumbling down the road, high as a kite. Maybe I could milk Jerry for some info.
What was the deal with that? I asked. That happened right before I started here. Who was he?
He was identified as Adam Campbell. Lived in a fishing camp down at the end of Sweet Bayou.
Then he shrugged.
Wrote for magazines, tech articles, that sort of thing.
Neighbor said he was a nice guy.
Some teenager got lost there a couple of months ago, and Adam let the search teams use his yard and house as a base of operations. Cooked for them, too. Big pots of gumbo, crawfish, jambalaya. I think everyone was pretty disappointed when the little teen bastard was found alive and well.
A smile flickered across his face.
If he was so nice, why didn't any of those people step up and pitch in for a real funeral? I asked, frowning.
Jerry pushed away from the desk and stood, grimacing as he audibly popped his back.
Because people suck, and everyone's always sure that someone else will take care of it.
He glanced at the clock.
Time for me to drag my sorry carcass out of here. Have fun with the stiffs.
Always, I replied as I sat in his seat and pretended to pick up where he'd left off with the game of solitaire. I waited until I heard his car leave the parking lot, then grabbed my lunchbox and scurried to the cooler. The MVA was scheduled to be picked up by Riverwood, which meant I suffered no guilt as I scooped the brains out of the bag and into my jars. The heart attack I left alone, since it was going to Scott Funeral Home. Kang had been a dick, but I wasn't going to back out of our deal. I poured tomato soup in on top of the brains and then quickly blended them up with my cheapo handheld blender. It didn't look terribly appetizing, but at least it wasn't instantly recognizable as brains. My appetite gave a soft little nudge as I made my little brain concoction. I knew I needed to try to resist those first nudges of hunger, try and hold out a bit to make my supply last as long as possible. But not right now, I told myself. I need to be sharp for work, right? I indulged in a few big gulps from one of the jars, then replaced the lid and stuck both jars into the lunchbox with the blue frozen thingies that would hopefully keep the brains from going bad before I got home and could put them in the fridge. I didn't have a ton of brains to spare, but I also didn't feel like dealing with the hunger right now. The doorbell buzzed as I was putting the lunchbox back in the drawer. It was Kang, and he gave me a tight little nod as I stepped back to give him room to push the stretcher in. You're here for Blackwell, Travis, I asked. He glanced at the paper in his hand. That's right. Is he all ready? He asked. I narrowed my eyes into a glare. Uh-huh. He's all ready. All there. All that good stuff. Kang gave a slow nod. I appreciate that. Yeah, sure thing, I replied as I turned and headed to the cooler to retrieve the body, not adding asshole, even though I really wanted to. The urge to run over his toes with the stretcher when I returned was pretty strong, but I managed to resist it. I was even nice and helped him pull the bag from our stretcher onto his. He buckled the straps holding the bag onto the stretcher, then paused and looked at me. I didn't really think you'd keep to our deal. I apologize for misjudging you. I shrugged in acceptance of the apology. Yeah, well,
You shouldn't be so mistrusting. His lips twitched. When you've been around as long as I have, you learn that trusts are easily broken. Oh, please. You can't be that much older than me. Kang let out a low chuckle. Yes, I can. And I am. I frowned at him in doubt. Oh, really? How old are you? He lifted an eyebrow. Isn't that a rude question? Gimme a break. Come on, fess up. How old are you? I was 7 years old when I lost my parents during the Korean War. Oh, sorry to hear that. I struggled to remember the brief smattering of history I'd actually studied, but couldn't think of when the Korean War was to save my life. There was still stuff about Korea in the news, so maybe it was only 20 years ago or so? I didn't want to say anything, though, for fear of looking like a complete dumbass. Okay, well, anyway, don't worry about the brains. I won't screw you. But can you please answer some questions for me? He crossed his arms over his chest. I'll do my best. How often do I need to eat brains? I mean, I feel hungry all the time. If you do a lot and are active, you'll need brains more often, he said. In other words, you won't ever see a zombie exercise. Under normal circumstances, you'll be fine if you eat about a third to half a brain every other day. After a few days without, though, things start to go pretty bad quickly, like a downhill slide. So, if you're in a job where you have to be fairly physically active, like yours, you're going to need to eat more often. But, he said with a gesture at the morgue cooler, at least you have access to brains. When there are brains to be had, I pointed out. People die all the time, Angel. That's one thing you can be sure of. Sure, but would they die soon enough to satisfy my hunger? Okay, next question, I said. It's a virus. Is there a treatment for it? He shrugged. No idea. Virus, parasite, I don't know. Maybe a treatment or cure is being worked on, but as far as I know, it's been around for centuries. I pondered that for a few seconds. A parasite? What, like a tapeworm? That was too damn creepy and disgusting. Okay, well, what about, relations? He gave me a blank look. Excuse me? I gave a frustrated sigh. Can we have sex? The skin around his eyes crinkled. Well, we barely know each other, but I'm game. Shit, no. Ugh. I could feel my face heating. You know what I mean. I scowled at him as he laughed, though a second later I was laughing too. Okay, I deserve that. I mean, can we zombies have sex? He grinned. Yes. But be sure to feed beforehand. It's much better that way. Plus, you don't want to risk having bits fall off. I shuddered. Okay, that's disgusting. It reminds me of an old joke. What did the zombie say to the whore? I looked at him blankly. What? He winked. Keep the tip. After Kang left, I pulled the internet up on the computer and did a search on the Korean War, then stared at the screen in shock when I saw the dates. 1950 to 1953. Holy shit. Kang's an old man. Had he been surviving by working in funeral homes all this time? But he still looks like he's in his 20s, I thought with growing amazement. Then I sighed. If I'd realized how old he was, I would have asked him if he looked young because of the zombie stuff, and how long he'd actually been a zombie. Don't be a fool, stay in school, I muttered to myself. Fortunately, my job offered plenty to distract me from thinking about my general ignorance. I went out on a pickup of a bum who'd been found dead under a bridge, and then of some lady who'd managed to gas herself in her bathroom by combining bleach and ammonia. I shamelessly grabbed lunch at a drive-thru on my way back to the morgue and scarfed down a burger to satisfy my far less annoying food hunger, while managing to completely forget the fact that I had two dead bodies in the back of the van. By the time I made it back to the morgue and got everything put away and entered into the computer, it was close to the end of my shift. Nick would be showing up in the next 20 minutes or so, and the morgue was as spotless as I knew how to make it. I'd remembered to throw the trash from lunch out, but I knew from experience that I should probably check to make sure everything in the van was where it needed to be. Nick was an arrogant pain, and if I'd somehow dropped a single French fry, I'd never hear the end of it. I stuffed my key card into the front pocket of my jeans and exited out the back door. The door clanged shut behind me as a sickly familiar smell washed over me. I spun around as a jab of adrenaline sent me into high alert. It only took me a second to see the figure crouched in the shadow of the wall like a lion about to pounce. But this time I wasn't injured and alone, and I wasn't hungry at all.
"You told me to come here,"
Zeke said, his voice already beginning to take on an unpleasant rasp.
"You said you'd give me brains."
He straightened. He'd changed clothes. Now he wore a New Orleans Saints shirt and paint-spattered jeans. They looked grubby and nasty, and I didn't want to think about how long he'd been wearing them. A flare of annoyance shot through me.
"Yeah, but you didn't need to scare the crap out of me. Do you get off on that shit?"
"I'm hungry," he snarled.
Then he shook his head.
"You don't know what it's like."
"Whatever," I said, scowling. "You know you could have killed me that night." He bared his teeth.
"You're a zombie. That wouldn't have killed you."
Annoyance shifted to anger.
"It fucking hurt anyway. And you didn't know I was a zombie when you caused that accident. If I'd been a normal human, that wreck would have really fucked me up."
A cold chill walked through me.
"Or was that your plan? Did you want to kill someone?"
He took three long strides forward, but I managed to hold my ground.
It helped that I was still totally sharp and focused from my recent meal.
"I saw your van go by," he said. "I knew it was the coroner's van, that you'd have to come back soon enough, and that you'd have a body in the back. Why else would you be out at that hour on that highway except for a pickup?"
He paused. His shoulders were hunched in a defensive pose.
"I waited until I saw headlights, saw that they weren't a car's."
"What if you'd been wrong?" I demanded.
He tilted his head.
"Then I would have been wrong,"
he said in a tone so casual it sent goosebumps down my back. I spun and started back toward the morgue. He seized me by the upper arm.
"You promised you'd share,"
he said, desperation edging into his voice. I slapped his arm, almost surprised when I was able to break his grasp.
"I know, I'm getting it, asshole."
He scowled and stepped back into the shadow. I swiped my card and entered the morgue, then retrieved a jar from my lunchbox, the one I'd already taken a few gulps from. Cradling the jar with its stupid mask and tape shoe polish decor, I paused. I'd completely forgotten about this zombie and my promise to him. I probably could have set some more aside if I'd been thinking about it. But my own supply was running low. Besides, it was a promise made under duress, and those didn't count, right? And surely he was getting brains from someplace else as well. It had been 5 days since the wreck. He'd be a lot more rotted if he'd been without brains that entire time, especially since I hadn't given him anywhere near enough to get him fully fresh. And he was willing to take the chance that I'd be killed in the wreck. Suddenly, I didn't want to think about where else he was getting brains. I returned outside and handed him the jar. "It's all I have right now," I lied. "I was out of work for close to a week," I added with a scowl. He ignored the jibe and tugged the lid off the jar, eyes closing briefly in bliss as the scent of brains washed over him. Then he looked back at me with a puzzled look.
"Tomato soup?"
"Trying to keep it from being so obvious, you know?"
"I hate tomato soup,"
he muttered. But he stepped back and held the jar with both hands as he drank the brain soup down. I watched, morbidly fascinated, as color returned to his skin. A few drops escaped the corner of his mouth, dribbling onto his shirt to form a Florida-shaped stain. Finally, he lowered the jar and gave a sated sigh.
"Oh, God, that's good,"
he breathed as he wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, then wiped his hand on his shirt.
"Even if it was tomato."
He held the empty jar out to me. His eyes were whole and clear again.
"When can you get me some more?"
I stared at him, then snatched the jar out of his hand.
"More? Are you serious? That's all I have right now."
A muscle in his jaw clenched.
"That's not gonna hold me for long."
"Hey, it's your fault I had to go through most of my supply," I continued, pissed. "That wreck fucked me up. I could have lost my job."
A snarl twisted his mouth.
"And then you'd know what I'm going through."
"Yeah, well, fuck you."
I balled my free hand into a fist without realizing it. You stole jewelry off dead bodies. That's fucking sick, man. A scowl curved his mouth.
I didn't steal anything. I was set up.
Oh, right, I scoffed. By who, the zombie mafia? But even as I said it, a sliver of doubt managed to work its way in. Kang had been awfully hostile until he'd been sure I wasn't going to hurt his business. Zeke's eyes narrowed.
You could call it that. Some people couldn't handle competition. Besides, we eat brains. That's sick.
That's for survival, I retorted. That's life or death. Or undeath. He took a step forward and fear flashed through me. He's going to try to take my key card so that he can get into the morgue, steal my brains.
I'm not going to let myself rot away, he growled.
Hey, what the hell's going on? I never thought I'd be so relieved to hear Nick's voice. Zeke pulled back from me, scowling. I didn't dare turn around, but I could hear the morgue door swing shut and Nick's footsteps as he walked up. You okay, Angel? He asked, coming up beside me. I flicked a glance his way. His stance was totally aggressive in a bantam rooster kind of way. His eyes were fixed on Zeke in what was probably meant to be a menacing glare. Yeah, I said, voice a tiny bit shaky. I thought about saying something else like, oh, he's just leaving, or he's an old friend and was stopping by, but I didn't. I felt no desire to give Zeke any excuse or out. Apparently neither did Zeke. With a final glare, he turned and then headed off in a jerky run. As soon as he was out of sight, I let out an unsteady breath, then almost jumped in surprise when Nick laid a hand on my arm. You really okay? He asked, and I was shocked once again to see real concern in his eyes. At my nod, he dropped his hand. That guy's a complete weirdo. Always asking how many bodies we have in the cooler? Kooky stuff like that. That was as good an excuse as any. Yeah, that was weird. I gave him a tentative smile. Thanks. Don't know what would have happened if you hadn't come out right then, but thanks. The smile he gave me was the most genuine one I'd ever seen from him, and he actually puffed up a bit with pride. It probably wasn't often he could be the knight in shining armor. Yeah, well, no prob. I got your back. Neither of us seemed to know what to do next, and an awkward silence descended. I should probably get back inside in case Riverwood calls, I said with a jerk of my head. Oh yeah, sure, he replied, seemingly as grateful as I was that the moment was over. Don't forget to clean the van out before you give me the keys. There were donut crumbs all over the seat last time. I masked a grin and headed to the van, strangely relieved that this nice Nick wasn't going to be the new norm.
Chapter 17.
My decent mood lasted until I pulled up to the house and saw my dad sitting on the porch. He had a beer in his hand and a pile of empties scattered beside his chair. I silently counted the cans, then closed my eyes and breathed a curse, well over a dozen. I was slow getting out of my car as if I could infinitely delay having to deal with him. Ye stink, he muttered as I tried to walk past him. I gritted my teeth. I knew he was only saying it to be an asshole. I'd eaten this morning. I know you've been paid by now, Angel, he said in a growl. You need to give me some goddamn money. He paused to spit on the porch, then curled his lip at me. You're gonna blow it on pills. That's what you always do. I bought groceries and paid the bills, remember? I said as I yanked open the front door and went into the house. I grimaced as I heard the scrape of his shoes as he rose. Don't you fucking walk away from me when I'm talking to you, he hollered after me. I thought we were done, I shot back over my shoulder. I spent all the money, that's why the damn cable works now and the lights are still on. He grabbed my arm and yanked me around. You're holding out on me, you worthless little bitch. Get off me, I yelled. I'm clean, goddammit. You only want me to feel like shit so you can feel better about being a stupid fucking drunk. I slapped his hand. You only want my money so you can buy more booze. I tried to twist away, more than a little surprised when I actually broke his grip. For a skinny man, he was still pretty damn strong. but all it did was piss him off more. I tried to duck away from the slap, but he got me hard across the side of the head and my ear.
"You owe me,"
he yelled as he landed several more solid blows to my face and shoulders.
"You owe me everything, worthless fucking bitch."
I was no kind of fighter, and all I could think to do was hunch up and try to avoid the worst of it and scream at him to stop.
"Dad, stop it, you're drunk,"
I shrieked. "You're hurting me. You're being like Mom." For an instant, I thought it would work, that it would make him stop. But in the next second, a black rage suffused his face.
"You, your mother's better off dead."
His fist came down, but I could barely feel it anymore.
"She can't see what a fuck-up you are. I gave up everything for you, and for what? For you to be a goddamn loser."
"I'm not a loser," I gasped. I could taste blood in my mouth. "I'm not on the drugs anymore, I swear." I knew I couldn't stay hunched down like this in the hope that he'd stop. I'd never seen him like this before. For the first time, I was afraid that he wouldn't stop until I was a bloody pulp. I managed to get my legs underneath me and shoved him away hard, harder than I meant to, sending him sprawling back against the couch. There was murder in his eyes as he struggled back to his feet, but it gave me enough time to run to my room and slam the door and lock it. He pounded on it and yelled for a couple of minutes, then finally fell quiet while I hunched against the wall and shook. I should have driven away as soon as I saw how drunk he was, I thought miserably. Dad's violence was predictable. I should have known better. Mom had been the one who dealt out slaps and hugs with chaotic unpredictability. I dropped my head to my knees and wrapped my arms around my legs. I hurt all over, but at the same time I could feel everything gradually going numb. Right now, that was cool with me. I jerked at the knock on the door and froze, pulse thudding painfully, even as I realized that my dad never knocked like that.
"Angel," I heard a deep and familiar voice say, "can you come out, please? This is the sheriff's office."
I dropped my head back against the wall. Fuck. A neighbor must have heard us fighting and called the cops. My throat went tight. I was gonna get arrested. I'd lose my job. I'm totally fucked.
"Angel, please. I need you to open the door, or I'll have to force it open and make sure you're all right."
I struggled to my feet. "I'm okay," I croaked. Yeah, I sure sounded okay. I fumbled at the lock, then pulled the door open. In front of me was a broad uniformed chest. I didn't want to look up, but I didn't have to. Not with the name tag M. Ivanov at my eye level. I felt like I shrank a few inches. "Yeah, let me remind him how much of a loser I am." He turned his head and called over his shoulder to a deputy I couldn't see.
"Gordon, 10:15.
I didn't know what that meant, but I heard my dad make a low, whining protest. Ivanov looked back at me.
"I'll need to take pictures of your injuries," he said, voice calm and even. "Do you want to go to the hospital?"
"Huh?" Then I shook my head. "I'm not hurt. It's okay. I just wanted this whole thing to be over with." A dull throb of hunger poked at me, and I pushed it aside. I couldn't worry about that right now. I was only hungry because I was a little banged up. He gave a low snort.
"Angel, you look like hell."
I glanced at my reflection in the mirror on my dresser, chest tightening at the sight of the split lip, puffiness around my left eye, and bruises already forming on my cheek and collarbone. It would probably hurt a lot more if I wasn't a zombie. Great, my pain tolerance was high enough for me to take a beating. I swallowed. "You gonna arrest me?"
"No. We're arresting your dad, though."
I jerked my head up to look into his face. "You don't need to do that. He's drunk, that's all." I didn't want him to go to jail. I didn't. So why did I feel a weird relief at the thought? God, I was a shit daughter. His expression tightened briefly, and a wash of shame went through me. He'd probably heard this sort of thing a million times before. Wife or girlfriend gets the crap beat out of them, then they can't stand to see their loved one go to jail. Yeah, I was being that victim. "I'm sorry," I tried. "It's just..."
"Angel, I have to arrest him," he said in a low, firm voice. "And since this is a domestic violence case, he'll most likely be held for at least 24 hours before he can post bail. I know this is hard, but I really need you to be strong for this. You don't deserve to get smacked around.
I know that. I did, right?
I need to get a statement from you, he continued. Can you do that for me?
I made myself nod. Hunger nudged at me again, almost tentatively, and I tightened my hands into fists. If I'd eaten as soon as I locked myself in my room, I wouldn't have any bruises. There'd be no reason to arrest my dad. Or maybe I would have been the one arrested, I realized with a cold chill. Right now it was pretty obvious that I'd been the loser in this fight. I swallowed hard. Maybe it was a good thing that my fridge was empty. The one jar of brains I had was still out in my lunchbox in the car. Yeah, I can do that. Something that might have been relief lit his eyes briefly.
That's good.
He paused.
Angel, you look like you're getting your life under control. I'm really glad to see it.
I bit back a laugh. This was control? Yeah, I wasn't doing drugs anymore, but that sure as hell wasn't due to any personal strength of character or anything like that. And the only reason I still had the job was because my life depended on it. But I managed to give him a small nod.
Thanks.
Too bad I had that whole zombie thing going on as well. His gaze raked the living room, a look of distaste naked on his face.
You should think about moving out. You can do better than this.
He looked back to me.
You're better than this. Don't let your family hold you back.
I was so shocked by his statement, I literally couldn't form words for several seconds. That's bullshit, I finally managed, anger flaring at his presumption. You have no idea what it's like. You think it's that easy? You think that all I have to do is walk out and everything will be peachy fucking keen? I knew I was treading on thin ice going off on a cop like this, but I was too upset and off balance to censor myself. Chagrin swept over his face.
No, look, I know it won't be easy, but...
You think we're just white trash scum, right? So yeah, I'm already a loser, so why not be more of a loser and abandon my dad? He frowned.
No. I'm saying you need to think about yourself at some point.
You think I don't? Fucking shit, I'm trying, okay? Give me a fucking break. I can't do it all at once. Yeah, the house and everything is shit, but do you think I like it this way? He seized me by the shoulders and gave me a small shake, cutting me off. It hurt where his fingers were pressing into one of the bruises, but the dismayed expression on his face kept me from trying to pull away.
I'm sorry, he said. Voice oddly rough. I was out of line. I shouldn't have said any of that about moving out or your family. It was a shit thing to say. I'm sorry. I know you're trying. I'm on your side and rooting for you, I swear.
Well, shit. How the fuck was I supposed to stay mad and upset after that? I sniffled, suddenly pissed for a different reason as I realized I'd been crying. I hurriedly swiped my hands across my eyes. Okay, yeah. He sighed, and for a weird instant, I thought he was going to pull me into a hug. He didn't, but I had the strangest wish that he would.
Now that we've established that I'm an insensitive dick, he said, are you still willing to give me a statement?
I forced out a wan smile. Yes, but you're not insensitive. He gave me a grin.
Still a dick, though, right?
You're not insensitive, I repeated. He chuckled, looking relieved.
You know me too well already. Come on out and sit down. We'll get all this crap over with.
I allowed myself to be led out to the living room and obediently sat on the couch. I watched him walk out to the door into his car. I assumed to get paperwork and a camera. Yeah, right. I'm finally getting my life together. Too bad I had to die first.
Chapter 18. As soon as the cops left with my dad, I retrieved my lunchbox from my car and scarfed down a jar of brain soup. It wasn't until I was lower in the empty jar that I realized that I was going to have a hard time explaining how my bruises disappeared overnight. Then again, Ivanov was the only one who'd seen them, right? I simply had to hope I didn't run into him for a few days. The universe, of course, had different plans for me. The next morning, I got a call to pick up a body, and as soon as I pulled up to the trailer, I saw Deputy Ivanov standing outside, talking to a crime scene tech.
I scowled and dug for a pair of sunglasses in my purse. Usually people wore sunglasses to hide a black eye. I was wearing them to hide the absence of one. It didn't help that I could tell this scene was going to be a disgusting one. There were two crime scene techs, Sean and a blonde woman whose name I could never remember. Both were wearing Tyvek coveralls and masks, and everyone else on the scene was keeping their distance from the door of the trailer. Hopping out of the van, I yanked gloves on as I walked up to see what I was up against. Ivanov gave me a mild nod, then headed off toward his car. I didn't know whether to be relieved or miffed. I gave Sean a grin. "Aren't you sweating your ass off in that?" The red-haired man gave a tortured sigh. "I keep telling myself that sweating is better than stinking." "Is it a bad one?" He shuddered. "Let's just say I don't envy your job one bit. All I have to do is take pictures." "I'm pretty sure nobody wants my job," I said. "I guess that's job security, right?" I headed up the trailer stairs, pushing the sunglasses on top of my head. I peered in and got a good look at the body sprawled on the floor beside an executive chair that looked totally out of place. The guy had probably been white, though with the amount of bloating it was tough to tell. He'd probably been a bit heavy before death, but now he was so swollen with decomposition, I had to wonder if we'd be able to get him into the bag. He had on faded black jeans and a light blue t-shirt, though now it was heavily stained with purge fluid that had seeped from various orifices on his body. Maggots squirmed in his mouth and nose and eyes. Seriously nasty. "And my sense of smell is at full strength right now," I thought. "How wonderful." Darrell was already inside and gave me a nod as he made notes on his pad. I didn't want to interrupt his flow of concentration, so I busied myself with looking around and being nosy. Big black flies buzzed against the windows and tangled in the dingy lace curtains. A line of ants tracked up the side of the kitchen counter, most likely headed to the stack of pizza boxes that hadn't been thrown out. Other than the ants and the flies, the place really wasn't crummy or scuzzy at all. He'd kept it pretty nice and neat overall. No piles of dirty laundry in the hallway or dishes in the sink. The carpet looked fairly new, the furniture all matched, and the entertainment system was even better than Randy's. The computer on the desk was still on, screensaver running, and I gave the mouse a nudge to see if the guy had been in the middle of typing a suicide note or something.
"Dude loved his games," Darrell said without looking up.
"Huh?"
He gestured at the screen in a vague motion.
"That's Left 4 Dead 2, and if you look on the shelf, he also has Halo, Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, and damn near every other popular game."
I let my gaze sweep the interior of the trailer. Did he have any life other than this? Did he have a job? Didn't anyone miss him?
"Oh, he had a job."
A grimace passed over Darrell's face.
"He has a record a mile long for dealing drugs. Pot, crack, heroin, you name it. This guy was a real prize. I guess I'm not surprised that he spent so long without being found."
He gave a dry chuckle.
"Though I bet his regular customers were jonesing. The neighbor in the next trailer over was the one to call the cops."
"Complaining about the smell?" I said. Darrell grinned.
"Got it in one."
I crouched by the body. There was something odd, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I took a deep breath, aware of the stench of the decomposition, but not bothered by it. Something's missing. My mouth went dry as realization hit home. Okay, so it had been less than a day since I'd last had brains. I wasn't hungry, and probably wouldn't start having cravings for another day and a half at least. Even so, one thing I'd discovered in the last couple of weeks was that I had a nose for brains. I could smell it in the people around me. And I could certainly smell it in dead bodies. It didn't even matter if there was so much decomposition that it'd be inedible. Brains rotted fast. After a few days outside of a cooler, there usually wasn't much left but a nasty gray goo, but I should still be able to detect the scent. Yet there was only the barest whiff of it here. "Hey, Darrell," I said, doing my best to keep my voice nice and calm and casual, even though a strange uneasiness was working its way through my gut. "What's a guess on cause of death?"
"Hang on a sec. We're gonna see what we can find out," he replied.
He jotted down a few more notes on his pad, then set it down on the desk and tugged on gloves.
With the amount of decomposition and all this purge fluid surrounding him, it's gonna be tough to tell how he died, unless there's some obvious trauma still evident.
I didn't respond to that. I knew what we were gonna find. At least I couldn't think of any other explanation. Still, when we turned the body, I felt an odd relief that I hadn't been imagining it.
Well, how's that for obvious trauma? I asked, looking down at the caved-in back of the guy's skull. Maybe I was starting to get the hang of this whole undead thing.
Darrell let out a low whistle.
I think that qualifies.
I flicked a maggot off my glove as Darrell went outside to tell the detectives that it looked like a homicide. A large black fly buzzed in a low drone around my head, and when I waved it away, it joined the others congregated against the window. I straightened as Sean entered.
He gave me a pained look as he pulled the mask back onto his face.
Angel, I have no idea how you can stand this stench, he said. Darrell's been doing this for long enough that I think he doesn't have any smell receptors left, but you...
He grimaced as he snapped pictures of the skull and the injury while I held the body in position for him.
You are one tough chick.
Then his eyes crinkled, and even though he had the mask on, I could tell he was grinning at me.
Or maybe you're seriously sick and twisted, in which case you are so in the right line of work.
I laughed. Gotta be the second one, I said. I'm not tough. He finished taking his pictures, and I walked out with him. I knew it would be a while before I could take the body since it was pretty obvious it was a homicide, which meant that the detective assigned to the case would need to go in and do whatever it was detectives did. About all I knew was what I'd seen on TV, and considering how much of what I did differed from the TV version, I figured I was most likely misinformed on 90% of the details. I pulled off my gloves, leaned up against the front of Darrell's Durango to wait. I'm tough, huh? That was a new one. I had to admit, I was kind of tickled at the thought.
How are you doing, Angel?
A familiar voice asked to my right. I turned with an automatic smile before realizing who the speaker was,
and my sunglasses are up on my damn head, I thought with a mental cringe.
I'm all right, Deputy Ivanov, I replied, keeping the smile on my face. Fuck it. I wasn't the one who'd been arrested. I wasn't going to hang my head in shame simply because my dad could be a real piece of shit.
I'm doing all right, I said.
Thanks. His eyes crinkled as he gave me a smile of his own.
You know, it's all right to call me Marcus.
Then his eyes swept over my face and I had to resist the urge to stiffen.
You sure don't bruise easy, do you? I'd have thought you'd have had a real shiner going there.
Lucky, I guess. And I put ice on it. He grimaced at my stilted response.
Sorry. I'm doing that insensitive dick thing again. I shouldn't have brought that up.
I shrugged. Nah, it's okay. Shit happens, you know? An awkward silence fell, and I flicked another maggot that had managed to make it up to my forearm. He chuckled.
I bet you never thought you'd ever be casually flinging maggots around.
I had to laugh. Oh my God, no kidding. I used to gag if someone spit on the sidewalk in front of me.
You know,
Marcus paused, and it looked as if he was getting up the nerve to say something. I waited, and a few seconds later he continued.
I was the resource officer at your high school for a short time. I'd only been a cop for a few years, and usually those assignments are given to the guys with a lot more experience, but the department went through a phase where they were shuffling everyone around.
I had an odd feeling I knew where he was going with this, but I went ahead and said, Oh? His smile looked slightly abashed.
It was about 5 years ago. I remember you.
It was tough, but I forced myself not to look away. You remember when I left? He gave a slow nod. I made a face. Not one of my better moments. I didn't mention the time he'd arrested me. So far that incident was unspoken between us. Taboo. I far preferred it that way. He shrugged.
Maybe so, but at the risk of sounding like a pompous, condescending ass,
You're doing a good job getting over it.
Took me a while. And dying. He smiled.
I mean it. It's like you're not the same person you used to be.
God, if he only knew.
I'm not. I mean, I am.
I'm trying to figure out who I am, I winced. Holy shit, that sounded kooky. You know what I mean.
I do, he said with a slow nod. I think we all have to go through that at some point.
Yeah, I said. And some of us needed a kick in the ass first.
Look, I know this is the last thing you want to talk about, but I wanted to ask you.
He trailed off, looking strangely uneasy. Ask me to dinner? Ask me out for drinks? Ask me if I wanted to see what he looked like under that uniform? Yow, where'd that last one come from?
But no, he'd said it was the last thing I'd want to talk about.
He took a deep breath.
I wanted to ask you to please not bail your dad out of jail.
Somehow I managed to keep my face immobile while my thoughts went crashing into a tangled heap.
Huh? Don't bail your dad out, he repeated, eyes on me. I know this is tough on you, but you shouldn't be the one to get him out.
Cause I'm the victim, I managed to force out. Wow, my voice almost sounded normal.
That's right.
He scrubbed a hand over the short brush of hair on his head.
Give yourself a few days' peace.
He looked like he wanted to say more, but I didn't need to hear it. I knew what he wanted to say. He didn't want me to be that victim. He gave a shit. Maybe he was like this for everyone, but it didn't matter. I still couldn't help but relish the tiny spark of warm glow that it gave me. Okay, I said quietly. The smile he gave me in return was twinged with relief and worry. Hey, I said before he could say anything else that would make the mood even weirder or break it entirely. You want to grab some coffee or something someday? I mean, sometime when I'm not crawling with maggots, I added with a laugh that sounded nervous to my own ears and probably sounded desperate and pathetic to his. I totally braced myself for him to hem and haw and say that he couldn't or had a girlfriend or something. I was shocked instead when he gave me a nod.
That sounds nice. And I'm cool with the no maggots thing, too.
We were saved from any more possible awkwardness by Darrell's piercing whistle to get my attention. I looked over to see that the homicide detective was exiting the house. I'm up, I said as I pushed off the front of the Durango. It was nice talking to you.
I'm gonna hold you to that coffee, he said,
surprising me by giving me a wink. I turned away with a silly grin on my face to collect a maggot-covered body.
Chapter 19.
Dad called the next morning. I was expecting it, but that didn't make it any easier. Angel, it's your dad, he said after I answered. Not dad, but your dad, in case I wasn't sure, you know. Baby, I'm real sorry about what happened. I sat on the couch and pinched the bridge of my nose with my fingers. I know, you were drunk. I was wrong, honey. I don't know why I get so worked up. Because you feel like a failure, I thought. I'm a fuck up, which means you failed as a dad. But I wasn't a fuck up anymore. Or at least not as much of one. He couldn't see that. Or maybe he didn't want to see it. Then he'd be the only loser in the house. Can you come bail me out, please? I've been here a day and a half now and they keep it so goddamn cold in here and I'm hurting bad. Shit. Shit, shit. I squeezed my eyes shut. I'm sorry, Dad. Maybe if you tell them you're in pain, they can take you to the clinic. Why can't you come bail me out? He sounded tired. Old. I felt older. Yeah, he'd been a complete piece of shit, but he wasn't always like that. Not always. Sometimes he came through for me. Like the day he took me to the ER with broken ribs and arm when I was 12. I could still remember the dull pain in his voice as he told the police to go and arrest his wife, because he knew that if they didn't, she'd end up killing me. She'd been mentally ill. I could see that now. But all I'd known then was that Dad was saving me and at the same time betraying my mother.
I'd loved him and hated him. Still did. The knot in my throat made it tough to talk. I can't, I said, my voice little more than a hoarse whisper. Dad, I don't think they'll let me bail you out, I lied. And I don't have any money left, remember? He was silent for so long I thought maybe he'd hung up. It was only the noise of the people talking in the background that told me he was still on the line. Okay, baby, he finally said. I understand. I'm sorry, Dad, I choked out. Then the background noise cut off, and I knew he'd hung up. I sat there with my head in my hands for several minutes, then called the jail up and asked them to have my number blocked from the inmate phone system. He'd get out eventually, but I wasn't going to help, and I couldn't take any more calls like this. Go me, I thought dully. I'm not that victim.
Chapter 20.
I was starting to figure out that Darrell had a sixth sense going on, where he knew exactly what to say to make people feel better, even if sometimes that something was absolutely nothing. Not even an, I'm here if you need someone to talk to, which is usually even more unhelpful than staying out of it completely. And that old, if you need anything, let me know, is also a total crock. You hear people say it all the time, but then you never see anyone actually call up the person who said it and say, hey, remember when you said to let you know if I needed anything? Well, I'm feeling really overwhelmed. Could you please come clean my kitchen? Because if I could have a clean kitchen, I'd feel like I had a bit of a head start. You'll never hear someone say that, because then the person asking the other person to clean their kitchen is seen as a helpless, incompetent dick. What would be so much better would be for the person who spouted the useless, if you need anything, just ask platitude, to fucking go over to the person's house and clean their goddamn kitchen without being asked. Go over and say, hey, you go take care of your kid, or your work, or go take a fucking nap. And when you get done, you'll have a clean kitchen. And no, you don't owe me a goddamn thing. Someday the shoe will be on the other foot, okay? And that was the sort of shit that Darrell did all the time. He never breathed a word or a hint, but he was too tapped into the gossip to not know what was going on with my dad. He didn't ask me why I was so quiet, which was more of a relief than I could have possibly expressed. And no, he didn't come over and clean my kitchen. But when I met him at a death scene later in the morning, he stopped me before we went inside the condo and handed me an insulated cup full of hot chocolate and a paper bag with an egg and bacon biscuit in it.
You're too skinny, he told me. And if you don't eat it willingly, I'll hold you down and make you eat it.
I took the bag from him. I had absolutely no doubt that he would do exactly that.
Besides, he added with a wicked smile, you should always be well fed going into a death scene. There's nothing worse than puking on an empty stomach.
I have never and will never puke on a death scene, I informed him around mouthfuls of bacon and egg biscuit.
He grinned. I'm beginning to think this is true. You're getting to be pretty damn hardcore. Amazing the stuff we can survive, isn't it?
That was the closest he ever came to saying something meant to be comforting. Yet I was more comforted and reassured and all that than I would have been if he'd given me a big old hug or anything weird and touchy-feely like that. Actually, if he'd given me a hug, I'd have probably freaked the hell out because, well, that would have been seriously weird. But then again, I was about as far from touchy-feely as you could get. Unless you're fucking me, don't put your hands on me. I finished up the biscuit and hot chocolate and followed Darrell into the condo with the stretcher and body bag. There was no crime scene tape or sign-in log, only a deputy at the door who directed us toward a bedroom in the back. I left the stretcher in the foyer and followed Darrell with the bag. We were in a condo on the south end of Tucker Point in a complex that advertised itself with terms like luxury and high-end. Through the bedroom window, I could see the Krieger River, and I'd seen on our way up that the bottom floor of this condo had a walkway that led to a private dock, where a modest-sized boat was parked. The condo had all of the modern touches, stainless steel appliances, wood floors, marble counters. The furniture in the bedroom was solid and elegant, all in a matching dark oak, unlike the thrift store variety selection in my own house. The bedding was a rich red and gold brocade and looked expensive as hell, though right now it was stained with vomit and saliva. But not egg and bacon biscuit vomit, at least. The source of the vomit lay sprawled on her side, eyes half-lidded and dulled by death. She looked fairly young, maybe mid to late 20s or so. Pretty and slender, she had shoulder-length brown hair, subtly highlighted with red and blonde, tendrils of which snaked through the congealing mess of puke beneath her head. Bubbles of spit lingered on her mouth, and I could see the remains of a dark red lipstick. She was wearing a pink tank top and panties that looked like they came from Victoria's Secret instead of Walmart, and her nails were nicely done with a French manicure. I could see flecks of pills in the puke, and about half a dozen baggies containing more pills on the nightstand. It wasn't too hard to figure out how she died.
Teresa Anderson. 29 years old, Darrell muttered with a shake of his head.
My mouth formed a grimace as I scanned the room. Living the dream, and it's still not enough.
Depends on how you define the dream, he replied absently.
Snorting, I casually poked through a pile of papers and file folders on the nightstand. What, you mean, money isn't everything, blah, blah, blah? I shrugged. I mean, yeah, money sure as shit helps, but... I swept my gaze around the room again. I mean, look at this place, it fucking rocks. I expected Darrell to argue the point with me, make the case that even rich and successful people could get overwhelmed or whatever, but he simply gave a slight nod while he scrawled notes.
It's a waste, he said mildly.
It's fucked up, I stated. She has money, a great place to live. I scowled down at the papers, legal briefs, letters, nothing terribly ominous. Looked pretty boring to me. Looks like she was some sort of hotshot lawyer. I bet there was never any question about her going to college. Darrell made a noncommittal noise in his throat while he peered at the body. I moved over to the bookcase, trailing my fingers through the thin layer of dust. A reed diffuser gave off a pleasant flowery scent that mixed oddly with the smell of puke. There were more law books here, a few books with lofty titles that sounded like they'd been featured on Oprah or some such thing. Nothing that looked fun or lighthearted. Maybe she couldn't handle the pressure, I said with a shrug, then sighed. I don't know. I'm talking out my ass. Was it a suicide?
Hard to say, he said, lifting his eyes from his clipboard. Cops didn't find a note, but that doesn't mean a damn thing. Most suicides don't leave notes. And Dr. LeBlanc is usually reluctant to rule it as a suicide, unless there's a fair amount of certainty. I expect this will get ruled an accidental overdose. He shook his head. Likely started out small. The occasional anxiety med, maybe Adderall or something to help her get through her classes. Then it grew from there, until she was dependent on it.
I fell silent at that, and my emotions tumbled strangely as the two of us wrestled her into the body bag. That theory hit a little too close to home. I'd narrowly escaped being found in a similar situation, though most likely in far less lovely surroundings. But it felt strange seeing that regular, upscale people went through shit like this as well. I mean, I'd known it on a logical level, but somehow I'd still always believed that drug abuse and overdose was limited to the loser segment of the population. I smiled without humor. No. Where I went wrong was believing that being in the loser segment had anything to do with income or social class. Darrell bagged up the various pills and helped me maneuver the stretcher out of the condo and into the van. I wonder if she bought her pills from Clive. Certainly a possibility, though I knew there was a hefty market for pain meds and plenty of people looking to make a buck that way. Darrell's phone rang as I was closing the back doors of the van. He made some notes on his pad and then looked up at me, expression sour.
Busy day today. Good thing there's room in there for more than one body.
The second body of the day was at the other end of the parish, in an apartment at the opposite end of the economic spectrum from Miss Anderson's luxury condo. An ambulance was parked outside, next to a sheriff's office car, and an unmarked one that clearly belonged to a detective. A quick glance at the unit number on the marked car told me that it wasn't Marcus's, and I couldn't decide if I was relieved or disappointed. Inside the apartment, the carpet was old and threadbare in spots, and none of the furniture matched.
But it was absolutely neat as a pin, and as spotless as it was possible to make such a place.
A faint scent of biscuits hung in the air, mingled with a faint flowery scent. I looked around to see if there was a reed diffuser in this place as well, but then realized that the source of the flowery smell came from actual flowers in a ceramic pitcher on the dining room table. Detective Roth stood by the doorway to the kitchen.
"Your victim's in here," he said in a low voice to Darrell, stepping aside so that we could see the woman on the floor. "Sarah Jackson."
Then he nodded his head toward the living room. A 20-something black man, wearing a white t-shirt, jeans, and work boots, sat on the couch with his head in his hands.
"That's Drew Russell, her boyfriend. They live together, but he got in from working offshore about an hour ago and found her." He grimaced.
Darrell gave him a nod and then moved to the living room. I stayed back while he spoke in soft tones to the boyfriend, but the grief on the man's face was so stark I had to turn away. Stepping into the kitchen, I thought for a brief, jarring instant that the woman was simply asleep, even though I knew that couldn't possibly be the case. Not if we were there. She was lying on her right side, left arm out in front of her, legs slightly bent as if she'd curled up to take a nap. But her eyes were open and lifeless, and when I stepped closer I could see that her right arm was twisted awkwardly beneath her. Crouching, I tugged on gloves. The portion of the body nearest the floor was red and mottled, and I'd been on the job long enough to know that was called lividity, the settling of the blood in the body after the heart stopped beating. I gently poked at a spot of red on her lower arm. It didn't change color, which meant the lividity was fixed and that she'd probably been dead for several hours, at least. At least this isn't something where the boyfriend is responsible, I thought with a vague relief. He seemed so devastated by loss. I'd have felt cheated if it was all some sort of act. I looked up as Darrell came into the kitchen.
"Anything interesting?" he asked as he crouched beside me.
"Lividity is fixed," I replied. "That's as far as I got." He nodded, then lifted the victim's left arm and flexed it at the elbow.
"Rigor's come and gone, though that's a lousy way to determine time of death. No sign of pulmonary edema, that bubbly spit thing that the last body had. That can be a sign of possible OD.
I didn't think this woman had overdosed, but I had nothing more than a gut feeling to back that up, so I said nothing.
"I don't think she's an OD, he said in echo of my thoughts. "But Dr. LeBlanc will find out for sure."
We did a quick sweep of the apartment for meds, coming up with nothing more than some antibiotics. A neighbor came and sat with the boyfriend while Darrell gently obtained information about her legal next of kin, and then I departed with the body, leaving the emotional wreckage behind. Dr. LeBlanc was ready to start the autopsies almost as soon as I made it back with the bodies. With the first, Teresa Anderson, he performed a quick test for drugs while I was still getting her propped up on the block. He peered at the results, then sighed, and set the test aside. He practically zoomed through the rest of the autopsy, doing cursory examinations of the organs while I struggled to keep up. I'd seen the quick test, and I figured he didn't feel like wasting time on an in-depth procedure when it was obvious to anyone with eyes that the woman had died of an overdose, whether intentionally or not. Of course, there was always the consideration that it could have been staged and that it was a possible homicide, but that was for the cops to figure out. The pathologist's primary job was to determine manner and means of death. Realistically, though, we all knew there was no foul play involved in Teresa Anderson's death. This was senseless, not sinister. In stark contrast to the first, Dr. LeBlanc took his sweet time with the second victim, Sarah Jackson. He performed a quick test on her as well, but it came back as clean as a whistle.
"Ah, well," he finally said, looking down at the heart that he'd carefully sliced open on his cutting board. "That explains it."
"What?"
He gestured me over with the blood-covered scalpel, and I obediently moved to his side. "She had an abnormally small right coronary artery. Most likely caused a fatal ventricular arrhythmia. Probably never had a single symptom."
He pointed to something within the heart, but I could only take his word that whatever I was looking at was abnormal in any way. "Wait," I said. She never felt bad or sick from this? She just dropped dead?
That's probably what happened.
That's not fair, I blurted, then realized how dumb that sounded.